Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, and this podcast is your guide to start creating a lifestyle by design. From entrepreneurship, money and finance, taxes and residencies, and everything in between, this show highlights the nuances of a true global citizen lifestyle. Let's dive in. Nico, welcome back to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. This is our second podcast together, and there has been quite a bit of hype, news, inquiries lately around Italy. And Nico, you are the immigration and accounting expert in Italy. So we're going to dive into nomad visas, residency options in today's episode. But let's get it started with the nomad visa. As of the beginning of 2024, there has been, even just as early as of yesterday, some very interesting headlines of Italy has a new digital nomad visa. And so I would love to hear from you what that looks like, if there is a new nomad visa, if there is a nomad visa potentially on the horizon, as we've been hearing so much hype in the news about this.
Yeah. Right. Thank you, Nicole, for having me, and nice to be back, and hello to all your audience. Yes, so there has been a lot of turmoil and news about the Italian Digital Nomads Visa, which, by the way, became a law in September 2022, if I'm not mistaken. But the whole point here is, well, in the law, there was a provision saying we need a decree from the Interior Department, providing the actual final requirements. So some requirements are out, but still we don't have the final decree with the final instruction how to apply at the Italian Foreign Consulate. As of today, what we know is, first, well, you need to have a proven 6 months experience as freelance digital nomad or remote worker. So unlike other laws, this applies to self-employed and employed. So if you work for your employer on a 6 month basis from, you know, wherever, remotely, even close to the headquarters, but remotely, that would work. And that's a big difference compared to other visas available in Europe. The second item is the minimum income requirement. So it's 5 times the minimum social insurance paycheck, 3 times, I'm sorry, which accounts to 28,000 euros gross. So you need to prove 6 months of experience as a digital nomad or remote worker, 28K, and you have to buy in into a healthcare, a private healthcare insurance. Now, this is not a problem because this is required for other visas like the elective residence visa. So not an issue. The only items that are yet to be discussed is how long the digital nomads will be. My guess is 1 month, and if that is actually convertible once it becomes a residence permit. Now, this is very important because most of the visas, whether are within the quota or outside the quota, you can convert them. So the first time you enter as a freelance self-employment visa, then you find employment, you moved into a residence permit for employment purposes. But it appears, and that's my guess once again, that this will not be convertible. So for the whole 5 years prior becoming an EU permanent residence permit, it's likely you have to stick to that, which comes a little bit complicated if you think about that you are a remote worker and your employer, for whatever reason, your employment relationship with your employer disappears. Different if you are a freelancer and you can find another client. So those are the two items that are still left, but hey, 2 years, almost there.
Is there an approximate time frame that you see as to when this entire process will be released for people to start applying?
In my humble opinion, the framework is in June, there are European general elections. So potentially they issue something before that. There's no precise timeline, and the note from the Interior Department is, we are working on that, and soon it will be released. But hey, soon is different whether you're talking to a doctor or to an Interior Department employee. So definitely no action, but my guess is in a couple of months, we may have some further news for that. Which, by the way, I strongly welcome any option to provide further working force, as the political discussion in Italy and various platforms are talking about the depopulation of the country. So, hey, we're not having kids any longer, so I guess they have to come from somewhere else. So, and this is surprising on a political spectrum that this is the most far-right government we've ever had, which is apparently very open to new solutions for migrants. So once again, the platform and the franchise do not match the actual actions done by their departments. And that's what we care. We care about, hey, this is the law and this is how we can, how Italy can be a beneficial place for our lifestyle and for our taxes. So I welcome any action in that direction.
And on that regard of taxes, now, of course, this may be speculative, but what do you think the taxes will look like for the digital nomads once they, once that is approved? Will they just be paying the standard tax rate in Italy? What do you think that would look like? Has there been any talks of that?
Well, of course, I mean, the first step, so taxation is a byproduct of immigration. So the first problem is, how do I move to Italy? Once you moved in is, hey, are you a tax resident? Well, the answer is potentially yes. Now, there are various provisions, and especially if you want to speculate about the double tax treaty, which are conventional laws set and signed by the countries to determine whether you have to pay taxes in this country or that country. Now, we have to be very pragmatic. So, whenever you renew your residence permit, and if you're talking the digital nomad visa, you need to, one of the criteria is to have 28,000 gross income. Well, whenever you renew that, the immigration office is asking you for proof of stay. Where do you live? Like, hey, do you have a rental contract? Do you have a hospitality? What's happening now? Second, what are you doing here? And this is tied to your status. So you need to either freelance or have your payslips. And finally, hey, can you show me your tax return? So your tax, so I have a lot of clients, they argue, well, based on the convention between Italy and Canada, Italy, US, Italy, UK, I lean towards the UK. Good, fine. I don't know if you're better off, but try to explain that to the immigration office. Well, then, you know, you may, so it's very likely you become a tax resident. Like 99% of the times, you are a tax resident of Italy, and Italy is known for its high taxes. However, there are two main regimes to discuss. One is for freelancers only, which is the so-called forfettario scheme. Basically, it's in other countries, it would be like a small business scheme. You trade personally up to 85,000 euros, you pay 5% tax no matter what your costs are. So it's very convenient for freelancers, which basically their whole costs are bills, utilities, rentals, because it reduces the whole compliance, no VAT, just one simple annual tax return. And, well, of course, you have to buy it into Social Security, which is or National Insurance Contribution, which goes towards your pension. So roughly speaking, if you're in the forfeitario regime, and by the way, I just put a terms and condition apply for American citizens, you pay roughly 20% of your revenues towards healthcare, towards Social Security, healthcare, and taxes. And with this scheme, you are enrolled into the healthcare program. So not that bad. And if you are a U.S. citizen, and U.S. citizens have to pay taxes, federal taxes, even if they reside overseas, they can claim this scheme, pay Italian taxes only, because Italy and U.S. have a Social Security agreement where U.S. citizens have to remain covered by the U.S. Social Security, which is cheaper, roughly 15% compared to 26% of Italy. But they can claim the foreign earned income exclusion up to $126,000, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, well above the $85,000 of the forfeitario scheme, which basically, I talked to an American yesterday, and we had 80,000 of income, 4,000 euros of taxes, calling into the healthcare, so no Medicare, no Medicaid, 15% to the U.S., no further federal taxes, not a bad deal. The other scheme that applies to self-employed and employed position, and this plays back into the remote workers, is the Impatria scheme. So this started in 2016, changed it a few times. In the current version is 50% of your income is taxable. So if you make $100,000, you pay taxes on the first $50,000. This lasts 5 years, and you have to remain resident for four. So roughly speaking, you make $100,000, you pay taxes on $50,000. On $50,000, it's roughly 15,000 euros. So your net tax rate is 15%, which plays it well. And by the way, I want to place it well even if you're a remote worker. Now, for a remote worker, there is a slight problem. So you are compliant with immigration. If you moved, so you are employed from your U.S. company, and your U.S. company has a policy of work from anywhere. Great. Based on that ground, proving that experience, you apply to the Italian consulate once the digital nomads visa rolls out. You go there, and they give you a visa to Italy. Fantastic. Move to Italy, claim the residence permit. So how do you trade? Well, you cannot remain under your payroll unless you're an American citizen, which once again is fine. But you need to have a local employer of records or PEO, EOR, which has to be licensed because you have to comply with Italian social security law. So if you are a Canadian citizen working for your Canadian company and work from anywhere policy, fine, you are compliant, you get the visa, you turn that into a residence permit, you're good. Your immigration is compliant. But your company is not compliant for social security purposes. So that's when you need to get your payroll provided by a local employer of record, which takes care of your social security. Or you trade personally as a freelancer. So the way I want people to think is immigration, taxation, social security are similar but different. Sometimes they overlap, but always never, they never match. So you have to think immigration compliance, tax compliance, social security compliance.
Interesting. I'm sure that most people probably think of the first two, but the third being the social security is what you don't really think of. And then I guess you would likely, or depending on the company that you're working for, but need to get some sort of permission from them if you're going to then be working through an EOR company.
Or you may be assigned because the foreign company may have local force. So you may be assigned or seconded to that. The point is, you need to do your homework before, and you need to provide the paperwork, not when asked, but before that. So that's the whole point of planning. I cannot stress enough the importance of a good planning and a good strategy. This saves you a lot of money down the road.
Interesting. Okay, thank you for sharing that. That is definitely an important consideration and a big piece of the puzzle, I'm sure, as well. On that topic, is there anything else that should be mentioned before we move on to some of the options to obtain residency?
Yes, and that's a general advice I normally give to everyone. So if you think about taxation, just broadly speaking, so every Western country has different streams to basically collect money from its residents. Well, everybody thinks about income tax and state regional tax. So taxation of income, taxation of consumption slash purchases, so VAT or GST, payroll tax, social security tax, a corporation tax if you're an entity, but there's another big item, which is inheritance tax. Now, whenever you think of inheritance tax, you have to think about how much tax do I pay. For instance, Portugal has no inheritance tax, but if you become a resident of a country, then your whole estate is ruled by the country where you die. Now, another big problem of inheritance is that you cannot fix papers while somebody's dead. So Italy is very convenient for inheritance taxes, but the procedure is somehow complicated. So if you're thinking of buying property and you are, you know, in your 50s, you have two children, well, you may buy that on your children's name and retain the use. But another item whenever you leave a country and move into another one is to consider to update your will reflecting the procedures, the legal framework of the country you're moving in the, I'm talking about Italy, I don't know about Portugal or Spain or France. And if you need to do something on your wealth to be compliant. So a common case is that in Italy, Italian government bonds are excluded from inheritance tax. They're part of your estate, you don't pay tax. So a common strategy when you get older to transfer your wealth into government bonds. Another strategy is to put items into a life insurance because they're also outside of the whole estate. So you can redirect to a third party. And if you come from a common law country, the will is very simple. You can say, I can donate everything to a charity, to that person, to the other person. But in civil law countries, Roman law countries, you cannot disinherit children. Every member of the family, depending on the relation to you, may have a claim on a set percentage. So common strategy, you take your movable wealth, wrap it up into a life insurance, and redirect to whoever you want to redirect it to. But this is a discussion to have before moving with a lawyer and with a financial advisor, et cetera, et cetera. So once again, two levels, tax and law. And that's very important to it before moving into a country.
Yeah, that's a great consideration to mention as well, because I'm sure you see that often getting overlooked. You're excited to move, but they don't really do the pre-planning that's really needed.
Correct. And in my opinion, it's the first time in history your body can stay somewhere. You can trade from somewhere else. You can have your banking somewhere else. And you can be protected by certain laws based on your passport. It's the first time in history you can make a good combination of assets, technology, products, laws, and Dolce Vita, if you want to, you know. If you think Italy is a better place to live than the Netherlands, well, you can trade in the Netherlands and live in Italy. First time in history. Never happened in the history of mankind before. So, but once again, you need to plan.
Are you interested in becoming a global citizen and living a lifestyle by design in a country that aligns with you? If this is a lifestyle that you're seeking to create, we can help. Whether it be multiple residencies, citizenships, bank accounts, trust or company formations, we operate in 30 plus of the most tax-friendly jurisdictions around the globe to get you structured properly. Head to the link in the show notes to learn more and to get your global citizen journey underway today.
Yeah, I think that's what it all comes down to here is really planning and being in touch with the right experts such as yourself to help with that planning. So let's talk about some of the ways that somebody who's looking to move to Italy, live the Dolce Vita life, as you say, could potentially obtain residency. So I know that you have previously mentioned to me that there are 12 different ways, but really it boils down to less than 12 and a few key options.
Yeah, correct. So prior digging into that, the Italian, just a quick clarification, the Italian immigration system. So just like every Western country, we have a quota system. So, hey, and I find it extremely stupid because it's almost impossible to quantify how much workforce you need in a certain sector, but whatever. There are some areas where there's a quota. So you may qualify, but the quota was filled. So, sorry, You have all the criteria, but somebody else took your place. So the easiest immigration strategy, well, my preferred immigration strategy is to move towards systems that do not have a quota, meaning there is no limit to immigrate, which are either investments, high skills, or high income. Now, going back to the digital nomads, that's outside of the quota. If 15 million people globally want to apply, they're all welcome. But then the question is, can the consular network of Italy process 15 million applications? Probably in 5 lifetimes. But anyways, without any further ado, let's start with the 12 ways to immigrate to Italy. So the first option, and that's, I would call it the pensioner option, is the elective residence visa. So this is based on passive income sources. Passive income sources is basically every income source apart from employment / self-employment. So dividends, capital gains, interest, royalties, rentals, pensions. All of these have to be proved before. Now, normally they take your income tax return of your country, or they may take, for instance, a social security letter. Assuming I retire today, received $1,000 in social security, but I have a statement saying, hey, I will pay you $40K a year. That's from the social security, you qualify. So the process is very easy. Everything has to be done from the foreign consul. You do not need any paper from Italy apart from a proof of hospitality. So every visa, whenever you apply the Italian consulate, they request a proof of hospitality. Who's going to host you? Sometimes they need additional documents like Chamber of Commerce clearance, Labor County Office clearance. But the elective residence does not require any document from Italy. Perk, well, if you have passive income, make more than $35,000 individually, plus 20% for your second applicant, your spouse, 5% every additional applicant, you can claim that. The cons are, first, you need to buy in for the healthcare. Second, you cannot convert that. So you cannot move to Italy on the elective residence visa and then start a business. You can Airbnb your home, fine. That's a non-professional activity. Hey, I want to freelance. I want to consult. I want to sell my stuff on Etsy. No, you cannot. Whenever you fill in for the renewal and on the income tax return, it shows the self-employment section, that's void of your visa. So that's what you need to think of. Easiest way to move in, but very inflexible. The second option is the study visa. So if you are enrolled into an approved Italian course or into an approved university course, upper studies, so you need to have high school and perform upper studies, which may last 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, depends. There are different types of options available. You are granted a visa which lasts as long as the university course. However, in the meantime, you can set up a freelancing position, because you can work part-time up to 20 hours per week, or you can freelance. And when you're done and you graduate, so that's the key point, you need to graduate, you need to successfully complete the study and get the certificate. You can convert that into like employment search. And if you have a freelance, if you already set up a freelancing and you have 8,500, so 8,500 euros of income, you can convert that into a freelance residence permit. You don't need to go back home, you can stay in Italy. However, the number of years to clock towards the EU permanent residency doesn't start with the study visa, starts after its completion. So this is a common option. You can move in, take the course, start freelancing, move towards your new life. The second option is...
note on that, what is the average cost of an annual education degree for university?
Hard to tell. There's difference between private and public, but we're talking 3,000 up to 10,000, the private ones. So 3,000 is the public, tuition and fees. So, and you have to buy in for healthcare, but healthcare for students is 300 euros compared to 2,000. So, well, I mean, 3,000 in Italy for university tuition is expensive. When I started in the States, that was like, oh, all right.
I think 3,000 is a bargain, but I'm from Canada. So.
Yeah, I understand that. So anyways, the second option is, the third option is the freelancer visa. So you can set up a freelancing activity from Italy. And basically, you need to prove that you've been doing the freelancing from your home country. So you have to have freelancing from your home country and basically start the same business in Italy. The key problem here is that this is within the quota system. So it fills up very quickly. This is an easy way around. You need to get a clearance from the Chamber of Commerce, from the Labor County Office, but it gets completed very quickly. Another option similar to this freelance, oh, by the way, there are major categories of visas, and those are subsets. So the freelance visa is within the freelance options that also includes the corporate position visa. So I got asked by my clients, hey, I'm going to set up a limited company in Italy and I will get a visa. No, because the first requirement is that, A, you don't need to set it up. You need to be a director of the business. So if you have a friend, somebody you know that has a limited company, not a partnership, a limited one, and they can put you on a company board as a director, co-director, board of trustees member, fine. But the company needs to be active and needs to be alive for at least 3 years. So once the company files the accounts for 3 years, you're good. Once again, this is a freelancer option within the quota system. Now, going to the other option is the startup visa. So the startup visa, basically you say, hey, I want to set up a startup. Has to be innovative, and the innovation has to come from its processes and from the goal. So you cannot say, hey, I'm setting up an innovative bakery because we have all new materials. No, you have to say, hey, we're doing research in, some new type of flours, and the process is yada, 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 plus e-commerce. Great. This has to run through a committee. So I don't like this option because it's all based on what the committee says. And the committee bases its decision on the idea, the business plan, and your background. So if you've been working 10 years for airlines, but you have a strong passion in music, hey, I'm going to set up this startup like to make the new streaming service, blah, 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 then you send in the CVs like, 10 years, airline pilot, they're like, nope, sorry, this guy doesn't fit, or this lady doesn't fit. So this is all based on a panel judgment, which it's very hard to challenge. Another option, but you need to have money, because it's the investor visa. So the investor visa, and by the way, all the items we discussed before, elective resident needs to get 31K of income, but you don't need to make an investment. You don't need to buy a home. Italy doesn't have a real estate to residency. So those are all based on how much money I make, not how much wealth I have. The only option for wealth is the investor visa. Basically, they say if you invest 2 million into Italian government bonds, which as of March 2024, the yield is 4.something%. Not a terrible deal, but you need to have 2 million spare. Or 1 million into a philanthropic initiative. I mean, do you put 1 million away for charity? Hard. Or half a million on a private company, or 250,000 on a startup. Now, you can work it on the way back, and you can fund your startup, make it running, let it have some activity, so run profits, loss, like cost, etc., and then apply after 1 year, because they need to check at least one financial account. Now, there are two items to consider. The first one is, well, personally, I wouldn't put $500,000 in somebody else's company. I wouldn't put $500,000 on a company where I have 20% and I'm not on the board and that I don't oversee transactions. That's pay, good relationship, but money scheme, money talks. I put $500,000. And if you put $500,000 in a business and the business goes wrong, well, you have the right to stay in Italy, but you lost $500,000. Was that worth? I mean, is that a price tag you put on Italian residency? Potentially, yes, but there are smarter ways to do that. The first one is to, you know, take it from long before and invest in your own company. The second option is a startup is preferred because you get a tax credit of 30% of the investment. So you create a company today, 10,000 paid up capital, you start trading. And by the way, in order to set up a company, you need not to be a resident. If there's an investment protection treaty between Italy and your country where you reside. At the moment, for instance, a Chinese resident, doesn't mean it's a citizen, can set up a company in Italy and run it. A Canadian can, Saudi can, UAE can, Iranian cannot, Indians cannot. So that's one option. But you set up the company and then you say, hey, I want to invest $250,000. Well, if you invest $250,000 in a startup, you get 30% back in tax credits. So this can also play out. Of course, you need to be $250,000 is put there and after 5 years, when you need to retain the investment, you can get it back. So that's one option. The other option is there's also a traded fund option. Italy has those funds called SICAV, SICAV, SGR, which are basically company normally owned by banks, which they provide you, which you buy in a share into, and they invest into private companies. So it's a sort of diversified portfolio run by banks that invest into private non-traded companies. The good thing is that the fund is always liquid. So you put $500,000 today, and in 5 years, you can get $500,000 back. So it's the idea is kind of, I can park the money there. I may get a profit, may get a loss, but my investment is always liquid. Whereas if you invest in a company that builds homes and your capital created one home, and after 5 years you want to move out, well, the company doesn't have $500,000 on its bank account. So what do? That's non-liquidity. So, but once again, if it's your own funds and your own activities, that can play a different game. But my point is be careful with the investor option because it's... putting a big chunk of money onto somebody else's wallet. So be careful of that. There are alternative options that may be cheaper, may make more sense, takes more time, or there are traded funds which are always liquid. So consider that. The other freelancing option is the representative office. And by far, this is my favorite option. For a few reasons. First, it's outside of the quota system. Second, you don't need to invest a lot of money. Third, it works with almost every company globally. So if you have a company in your home country, limited company, you create a branch to Italy and require basically an assignment / secondment, you are granted a freelancing visa. So no money is tied up in there. You just move to Italy under that business and you need to have a minimum of 8,500 euros of income. And this is convertible. So you move to Italy and then you find employment. Great. And your company doesn't have tax presence in Italy. It's just an office representative, not a permanent establishment. So this is hands down my favorite strategy to move to Italy. And even if the digital nomads visa rolls out, well, if you have to buy in healthcare and cost you 2,000 euros a year for 5 years, it's 10K, probably it's worth taking the representative office route, which you have a lower income threshold and you don't have to buy in for healthcare. So, but by the way, I prefer to have options rather than, hey, this is the only route, let's go there. So then we have a few other strange or very peculiar. The first one is the medical reasons. So if you have a certain illness, which is hardly curable in your home country, you can request quite quickly a visa to Italy. And you may be surprised about some type of illnesses. For instance, there are some centers that treat diabetes, which are world-class, and it's fairly easy to get a residence permit. Now, my advice is not to have a lifestyle that leads you to certain sicknesses, but I'm saying, hey, if you have that, I mean, you can claim residency to it. Another option is religious associations or missionaries. If you are chartered into some certain religion, normally it happens with Buddhist or Baptists or Protestants, et cetera, et cetera. If you're licensed in that country and you want to move to Italy under a religious visa, that is also feasible. Of course, you need to prove your track on being a religious associate or associates to a certain religion, which doesn't work that well with Islam for one simple reason. There is no specific hierarchical system to define an authority releasing a certain permit. So for instance, priests are Italian, born and raised into Catholic religion, and priests have their own IDs and identification, and they're on a certain role from the Catholic Church. Similar stuff happens to Protestant organizations. That doesn't happen into Islam, so that's a very difficult one to get. But Buddhism, Hinduism, Jainism, they also have that. But this is a very, small fraction of the immigration to Italy. And it's not like, hey, I convert today, I come to Italy. No, you need to be a religious leader to do that. So it's a little bit more complicated. Now, another option is the EU blue card. So the EU blue card, it's an immigration to Europe. So we have to think let me phrase it better. It's an immigration to a certain European country, but its standards are set by the EU laws. So you need to have a college degree, which has to be recognized from the Italian authority. So you need to go through a process called declaration of value. And you need to have an offer from Italy, which once again can be you can create a company in Italy, fund it, and create an offer to yourself, your spouse, whoever, but needs to have a college degree and a minimum gross pay of 27,000 euros. Now, this is a good strategy to immigrate if you have a college degree because you can move to Italy, but once you obtain your residence permit, you can resign and you can convert that into different visas. So what is very important to understand on the immigration strategy, there is one path to move to Italy, but it doesn't mean the same path has to be followed to remain in Italy. So you can move in as a EU blue card, and once you're in Italy, you can freelance and claim a freelance residence permit, which, unlike the freelance visa, falls outside of the quota. So it's very important to understand those two timing. One way to move to basically knock on the door and walk in, one way to remain. So the EU blue card is one option if you have a college degree. Of course, you need to basically be on a payroll, but you don't have to stick to that. This lasts 2 years, renewable, and just like every visa after 5, you can get the EU permanent card. Now, Italy does not have a family option. So, well, the only family option is for the elective residence visa. Apart from that, there's one applicant that moves to Italy, and once he or she takes residency, spouse and children can come along. So, albeit Italy, and let me give you just a quick note, albeit Italy does not provide same-sex marriages. Well, we have same-sex civil unions, but if you're married in a country that recognizes it, or even if you change your gender, you can still claim the family reunification / cohesion. Now, what's the difference between reunification and cohesion? So reunification means that one spouse is in Italy, the other spouse is outside of Italy. Family cohesion means both spouses are in Italy. And if you're telling me, how is that possible? Well, if you are an American, Japanese, Israeli, Canadian, South Korean citizen, a main applicant can enter with a D-type long-term visa acquired at a consulate. The other spouse and family can walk in on a tourist visa. And within the 90 days, they can apply for a family cohesion. Now, if you walk in with your spouse within 90 days where your time expires, you need to provide to the local immigration office your marriage license, which has to be translated, notarized, and apostilled. So whenever you work for your visa, you need to work on your spouse option too. So you do it together. So when you walk in Italy, you go to the immigration office like, hey, my husband, my wife is resident. I should go home within 90 days because my C-type expires. Please let me stay here. That's the family cohesion. Family reunification is for those countries, let's name it India, China, Indonesia. First one comes in with all the paperwork, files a request to join, the letting his or her spouse join. Spouse goes to the Italian consulate in the foreign jurisdiction and they join together. So this is the difference. But and this is all based on passport. So if you are an Indian citizen, but your spouse is Great Britain, United Kingdom, you're fine. The spouse can move to Italy alongside yourself on a tourist visa. So that's very important to understand. But the key point is to work out the family cohesion before or together, well, before the application or together the main visa. That's very important. Well, and the 12th option is still under the radar with the digital nomads visa. Fingers crossed. On the next update, we're talking about that and how to practically move to Italy under it.
Wow. Okay. So definitely quite a few options. I'm curious, working with clients, which options have you found are the most popular?
Well, it basically narrows down to two. Apart from family reunification and cohesion, I think about that as a subset. So a sort of tag along. But mainly the elective residence visa, which proves very popular with pensioners and the representative office. Because to me, I mean, my whole philosophy is to spend more money into planning and maybe take more time and more money into planning, but to avoid any drainage while in it. So, because I understand, I mean, to me, I value flexibility more than certainty. So, if something is more flexible, allows me more option, and in a fast-paced world, that's what I think people should look after. And especially in a context that there are some good things about moving to Italy, which, so if you reside in Italy, you have a very easy access to banking in Switzerland, which is watered out for private clients. So if you trade it privately, that's a good place to put your money. And that has an easy access. So if you're in Spain, it's much more harder for a Swiss banking institution to onboard you as a client. So this is something you have to think. The other items to think is, well, you know, I try Italy after 2 years, I want to move somewhere else. Well, you can, but if you basically have a visa based on business, it's easier to move than onto the elective residence. And you have to think that if you want to work towards the EU permanent residency, which is like the green card of Europe, you need to stick 5 years into one country. So if I do 3 years in Italy, 3 years in Spain, I still didn't clock in into the five. So that's another important item. And to be honest, I got quite a few clients that rushed in to move to Malta, which I love that. And I've been there on vacation. I fancy Malta, especially in wintertime, can be our Florida. But it's very small. And people are like, oh, I'm stuck here for 5 years. Yeah. So the point is, if you move into a larger country like Italy or Spain, with, I feel, Portugal and Greece are smaller, you may have more options. So if you don't like a region, you move to another one. But it's very important to understand if you are, hey, I just want to, you know, chill. I don't want to do anything. I did my whole career in X country. Want to move to Italy? Great. Elective residence visas for you. Hey, you know, I'm hyped. I want to have a place in Italy. But hey, you know, I just want to have the flexibility to go here and there. I may have a business set up there. Well, you need to go through a freelancer visa. And if you want to be outside of the quota, you either put 250 or half a million, which is parked there for 5 years. You cannot dispose unless you get relinquished of your permit to stay. So this is why the representative office is better. And you don't have an adverse consequence on your foreign business. And you can keep trading on your foreign business and pay yourself 8,500 euros and you can renew the residence, the temporary permit to Italy. So that's the most popular option. But I think the digital nomads will play in a key role for some people which are like, hey, 2,000 for the healthcare, not a problem. I just want to move there quick. But overall, I see, and by the way, I'm a little bit biased because my clientele, since I speak English, is more New Zealand, Australia, UK, Canada, US. So I understand that some other countries like India, the investor visa proves more popular because they cannot set up a business or they don't have the same rate of business set up as Italy or the Italian or the Indian entity is set up as a partnership. So you need to find a country where it's easy to set up a limited company. So, but in my view, definitely the representative office and elective residence.
Okay, interesting. Good to know. So you mentioned residency. You can gain PR, and I believe it was 5 years. What does that look like? And then what does the journey to citizenship look like?
Okay, so 5 years to PR. So you need to register as a resident, 5 years to PR, 10 years to the Italian citizenship by residency upon passing the, I don't recall, I think it's B1, Italian proficiency language test. And that's another item I always tell my clients, especially if they're coming from the US, Brazil, Canada, is, are you sure there are no Italians in your lineage? Because if you have an Italian, like the Italian passport, it's fantastic because as long as you got a blood line, you're fine. Doesn't matter how many generations have passed. So prior to investigating if you can claim a residency option, you should consider, do I have an Italian ancestor? And by the way, if you do, you need to have all the records. And if you're in Northeast, well, I'm surprised at the amounts of Americans, Italians in Chicago, New York, Montreal, Toronto, Philadelphia, New Orleans, Rio, São Paulo, Melbourne. Melbourne has more than 1 million Italian passports. That to me is like, what? Melbourne, the largest Italian city by population is Buenos Aires. It's not Rome. So you don't lose it. You don't lose it all the way. You don't. And if the Italian consulate is stuck, now they're talking in real, it's like 4 years waiting time, you can move to Italy with the paperwork. And normally within 90 days, they can release. You can request residency and process it from Italy. And if you pass the 90 days of tourism, they can get you a visa to extend that until the process is finished. So we have clients that are like, hey, yeah, we have all the paperwork. Toronto consul said it's 5 years. Okay. Do you want to move to Italy for the summer? You got to stay here. We process it from here. And some of them got it in 60 days. Doesn't happen in weeks. You have to stay in Italy for 60. And then your whole family is good forever because you will never lose Italian citizenship. So before digging into, do I need a permit? The question is, can I claim the passports? And this can be passed on to the whole generations down.
Wow. Yeah, great option. And I mean, I guess if you have the documentation, but if you have that or you can get that, much easier than going through one of the 12 options we previously discussed.
Correct. Considering there's a specific residence permit to be released on that.
So in our last episode, which is linked below, we talked about the average cost of living, and I'm sure that may have changed slightly, but if you're interested in average cost of living in Italy, that is below. But we talked about residency, time towards citizenship. I'm curious about banking in Italy. Once you have residence, is it pretty straightforward to open a bank account or multiple bank accounts in Italy? You mentioned ease of access to Swiss banks. I'm curious what that looks like.
Yeah. So Italy, I mean, albeit Italy created among the oldest banks on earth, we are far behind technological infrastructure, banking infrastructure. Now, the point is, do you need a bank account to live in Italy? The answer is not really. Especially now, there are multiple smart banks which are not based from Italy. So, well, I don't want to name them, but there are very easy options if you have a residence permit. You can set up an online banking, accept payment in euros, and pay, you know, your utilities bills, et cetera, et cetera. The only problem comes in whenever you have to pay for your taxes. So if you, Italy has a specific tax forms that allows accountants like myself to charge your account only if it's based in Italy. An alternative option, which I have with some of clients of mine, is, hey, especially Americans, because Americans, they have to go through FATCA. So if you're an American citizen living in Italy, you have to fill in a paper saying, I'm a U.S. citizen. So the banking institution forwards the document to the nearest U.S. consulate, review. So some banks are like, no, I'm not going to get U.S. clients. They may find some difficulties and friction to set up a bank account. So they're like, you know what? I will use my U.S. bank account. They transfer the money to me, so I tell them, hey, it's 3,000 euros of taxes to pay by June 30th. They wire me the money, and I charge my escrow account as their tax agent. So the thing is, do I need a bank account? No, especially if you have a major debit card or credit card circuit, so you can pay bills online with your debit card or with your credit card. You can pay for even some minor Italian public offices or services. So you can pay for your kindergarten, you can pay for your nurseries, you can pay small hospital bills, you can pay, you know, municipality certificates, etc., through a QR code, which then goes to an Italian app. And the Italian app, you can enter your debit card. Now, this comes into play. If I earn money in dollars or Canadian dollars or whatever money, and I have to pay it in euro, how does the currency conversion work? But yeah, you technically don't need that. So you can have access to a lot of bank account. Now, if you're trying to access credit, you need to have a high street bank. That's it. Like smart banks, they work for to pay items. They are normally prepaid bank accounts, prepaid IBANs. You cannot request for credit. Now, if you are trying to request credit, apply for credit in Italy, especially, and people normally do it for real estate, you have to have two tax returns filed and you need to have a credit history. So, and it's almost impossible to transfer your credit history from country A to country B. So, and even myself, I never had a debt before 31. I always traded with, like, with my funds. I never had any type of liability. I applied for a mortgage to buy my office, and the bank employee called me and say, "Bad news. What? We cannot mortgage the property. Why? In our credit system, you're not there." I'm like, "Is that a good thing that I never paid a letter?" Like, "No, you have to have a credit card and charge it and pay that on time." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I had to take it for 3 months. After that, I had the score and they could mortgage my property. So my advice is you cannot rent it you cannot mortgage your property. If you want to work towards looking for mortgage, you have to have a credit history, so you better have a credit card. Now, some online credit card company, once again, the one I cannot mention them here, but they allow you to charge your non-Italian bank. So you can get an Italian credit card that charges your EU bank, whatever, French, German, maybe foreign, or you can go on the app and pay on time. So, which is a little bit tricky, because if you forget, then you get a negative score and it takes 12 months to be cleared. So I don't advise to do that. But if you build that up with two tax returns, then you can go to a standard bank and apply for credit, and you have all the items in check. But as far as banking, it's fairly easy to access that.
Fairly straightforward once you're a resident.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Well, this has been really interesting information. Before we wrap up, is there anything that you think is important to mention here that has not been mentioned?
Not really. Well, the only item is, I see a lot of people talking about how, well, most of the clients I have, they wanted to move to Italy, and because they visited that on holiday. So holiday and day-to-day life is extremely different. So, and my other main advice is a lot of people see a cheap property market, and especially if you come from crowded areas or like Los Angeles. Well, that was very cheap. So Italy is a buyer market. If you intend to buy real estate, even if it's extremely cheap, consider that once you buy that, you get the buyer's disadvantage that you leverage when you had to buy that. So my advice is lease the property for a while. Check which place is better for you, for your lifestyle, for how you envisioned living in Italy, but do not get lured into, "Hey, I'm going to buy a 1 euro property." That's a money pit, period. And if they sell property for 1 euro, how much would you think a neighboring property in the free market would cost? That's the question you should have. So that's the two major mistakes expats moving to Italy do is, one, do not update their will. Two, buy property immediately.
Yeah, I've heard quite a bit. I really know longer-term reviews. Maybe it didn't turn out well for them for these $1 homes, but I know in the news a while back it was the thing to do to go to Italy and buy essentially a free home.
Yeah, no, we got good stories about that, but it takes a lot of time to rebuild. You need to have project management, building management skills. It's not easy. Like, you need to know how to flip homes or to move to that. But I think it's great, but if your decision is, hey, Italy has cheap properties, guess what? We also have cheap rents. So, and as I said, summertime in Italy is fantastic. I think it's one of the greatest places to be. Cost of living is not crazy compared to other countries. It didn't go through the roof. But hey, you're new to the place. Maybe you found out that in November, that place sucks. And as I said, I value flexibility. Be flexible. Call Italy your home and your base and maybe spend two winter months in Malta. Fine. But don't be tied to a home that you may find yourself into a money pit. And as I said, you have the buyer's advantage. Leverage it out until you become the seller. So,
absolutely. Well, thank you for everything today, Nico. Where can people find you online?
Yeah. So mainly on my website. And we also have Facebook and Instagram, but mainly on my website where I run my blog. I'm more a writer. So I try to keep up with all the tax and immigration knowledge. And that's where you find a lot of resources and also my YouTube videos.
You've just listened to the Work, Wealth, and Travel podcast. If anything from this episode resonated with you, I would appreciate if you share this podcast on your socials. And of course, be sure to tag me. And don't forget to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this global citizen journey, and I'll see you in the next episode.